is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Who's on the Road? As Halo counties empty out during the workday, leaders weigh how to add local jobs. Before the cover story, we'll read the biz section and go into some of the reporter pages. Managing editor Dane Huffman brings us the biz section every week. His top story this week, guest bartenders spice up the J.B. Duke. A stream of visiting top bartenders at Durham's J.B. Duke Hotel offers a refreshing chance to take a break and get a glimpse of the hotel strategy. The J.B. Duke opened in 2017 as a contemporary complement to the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club and an easy walk to the heart of campus. While serving Duke University is essential to its mission, an effort to reach beyond Duke and support local nonprofits shows how the hotel seeks a role in the larger community. General Manager Don Ball said that a primary focus of the effort was to leverage these relationships and allow the community to see us. There is no question we are in the shadow of the hotel across the street, but we have our own personality and identity, he said. That personality is both classy and quirky, so its third year of celebrating mixologists is a good fit. September 4th will showcase Shannon Healy of Alley 26 and support the Parent Teachers Association at Club Boulevard Elementary School. The final event with Will McDonald of Liberty and Plenty Distillery on September 11th will support the Wake Tech Foundation. It's an opportunity for us to work with bars that are jewels in the area and allow us to both offer extraordinary drinks to our customers, but also allows our employees to learn from these seasoned veterans, Ball said. It's a win-win for all the businesses. The hotel has 198 rooms, and Ball said the audience varies. Breakfast tends to be hotel guests plus professors and others from campus. Lunch is very much campus-driven, he said, while dinner is a combination of locals and hotel guests. But the hotel is doing a steady wedding business, association meetings have come back, and business is back to pre-pandemic levels. The symbiosis between Duke and Durham is so vastly important to each, Ball said. More investment coming to Holly Springs. The once small town of Holly Springs keeps adding investments, and now a new nursing home with 120 beds is on the way. The town council voted unanimously on August 19th to approve a development plan for a skilled nursing facility near the shops at Holly Springs. The facility will be developed by Britt Haven of Kinston. The need for more long-term care facilities in the Triangle has grown as the population ages. Pruitty Health is redeveloping an independent living and skilled nursing facility near Five Points to add hundreds of beds. A 100-bed adult care home facility is expected to be built in Cary. The facility will be on property that is now vacant and valued at $2.8 million. If you haven't heard of Padel, that's P-A-D-E-L, yet, you probably will soon. The sport, which features solid rackets and balls that are slightly softer versions of tennis balls, has exploded globally and is starting to catch on in the United States. A Virginia group called Epic Padel is looking to open 100 courts nationwide by 2026 and is moving into the Charlotte market. Epic is partnering with a local Charlotte club called Prosperity Athletic Club to put in 5 courts, and Epic is looking for 2 more Charlotte locations. What you've seen with pickleball in North America, Padel is about to have a similar sort of blossoming across the country. Tim Bainton, chief operating officer at Epic Padel, told the Charlotte Business Journal. Former Carolina Panthers star Trey Boston has joined Epic as an investor. Oddsmaker puts Raleigh at number 3 for MLB team. Raleigh's chances at a Major League Baseball team may seem like a long shot, but at least one oddsmaker gives the Triangle a chance. Bookies.com oddsmaker Adam Thompson recently updated his bet on who might land the 2 expansion teams that Commissioner Rob Manfred would like to add. The leader, as expected, is Nashville, Tennessee, with an implied probability of 33%. Salt Lake City is second at 22.2%, but Raleigh is number 3 at a solid 18.2%, not exactly far behind Salt Lake City. Cookout spinoff eyes Raleigh location. Fast food chain Cookout's taco spinoff appears to be eyeing Raleigh again, but this time in a different location. A permit filed with the city indicates a new Taco Ruse restaurant is replacing a former Subway at 3940 Western Boulevard. The permit names Dodson and Company Construction as the applicant and Brody Key, construction manager at Cookout, as the owner. The restaurant building is next door to a Cookout at 3930 Western Boulevard. The best news, they serve smoothies. We will turn now to the reporter pages. The first of these is Life Sciences and Higher Ed, written by Zach Ezone. Fujifilm nets $2 billion deal in Wake County. Fujifilm Biotechnologies has landed another major deal for its massive Holly Springs facility that will come online this year. The company has reached a 10-year deal that will see pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson commit $2 billion to Fujifilm Biotechnologies. The deal will give Johnson & Johnson a 160,000-square-foot manufacturing suite at Fujifilm's massive $3.2 billion facility. Details of the agreement are limited. Johnson & Johnson, in a statement August 22nd, said that using Fujifilm's Holly Springs site will allow the company to further expand its manufacturing capacity in the United States. Johnson & Johnson said the move will create about 120 new jobs in North Carolina. Meanwhile, Johnson & Johnson is building a large manufacturing facility in Wilson that is expected to employ more than 500 people when fully operational. Fujifilm Biotechnologies, part of the larger Japanese Fujifilm Corp., operates as a contract development and manufacturing organization, working with pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies to produce biologics, vaccines, and other advanced therapies. The CDMO in 2021 began building a manufacturing facility in Holly Springs to increase its production. Last year, the company began working on an expansion, increasing its total planned investment in Holly Springs to $3.2 billion. This makes the site one of the world's largest cell culture manufacturing facilities and one of the most significant life sciences economic development projects in North Carolina. This deal with Johnson & Johnson goes back to 2023, when Fujifilm Biotechnologies first announced Janssen Supply Group, a division of Johnson & Johnson, as the facility's first tenant. The latest announcement is a continuation of this initial deal. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals is the facility's other large tenant. Fujifilm Biotechnologies earlier this year signed a 10-year manufacturing supply agreement with Regeneron valued at $3 billion. The first phase of the Holly Springs facility is expected to come online this year. Swiss giant takes stake in RTP firm. A company in Research Triangle Park that specializes in 3D printed implants has secured more than $100 million to support its growth. Restore3D has raised $65 million of new equity from a global investor and $39 million from its existing shareholders. This follows Restore3D raising $38 million earlier this year. The financing deal will see Partners Group, a global private markets firm based in Switzerland with more than $150 billion in assets under management, acquire a significant minority stake in Restore3D. According to a statement from the company, Partners Group will also join the company's board of directors. The deal marks Restore3D's first institutional investment, but the company has been successful in raising capital. It brought in $70 million last year. The company previously secured smaller funding rounds. The new funding will support Restore3D's efforts around product innovation and commercial growth. Ken Gall, co-founder and chief commercial officer, earlier this year told Triangle Business Journal the company is approaching $100 million in revenue. The company makes 3D-printed orthopedic implants personalized for individual patients. Restore3D offers shoulder, hip, knee, foot, and ankle products that have been cleared by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. CSL cuts jobs amid restructuring. One of the area's largest life sciences employers is undergoing a restructuring. The Australian biotechnology company CSL, with more than 30,000 employees globally, is cutting its workforce by up to 15% and separating its vaccine business, CSL Seqirus, into a standalone company. CSL Seqirus has a large vaccine-producing facility in Holly Springs. The company would not confirm whether the Holly Springs site will see layoffs. CSL is taking steps to simplify its operating model and enhance its clinical and commercial execution, a company spokesperson said in an emailed statement recently. Within the next 3 years, the company wants to reach the point where it's saving $500 million or more annually. Wake Tech moves ahead on expansion plans. Wake Technical Community College is advancing plans for a new campus as part of a transformative development in western Wake County. The college's Board of Trustees recently approved a master plan for the 34-acre campus near U.S. Highway 1 and NC Highway 55 in Apex. The campus is within the massive Viridia development, where Duke Health and UNC Health plan to build the state's first freestanding children's hospital. Wake Tech is planning three academic buildings at the campus, with design work beginning on the first facility, called Fujifilm Biotechnologies Hall. This 125,000-square-foot facility will house campus operations that support Wake Tech's biotechnology and advanced manufacturing training programs. The college plans to begin construction on the first building within a year and open it in 2029. In addition to biotech and health sciences training, Wake Tech plans to offer business and IT programs at the campus. Ben Tobin is the mastermind behind the Greater Triangle section of the TBJ. In Brunswick County, a prime site along the Cape Fear is for sale. More than 600 acres are up for grabs in Brunswick, and an industrial project could be on the way. Real estate firm Avison Young is listing 624 acres along the Cape Fear River in Leland. Avison Young declined to provide an asking price for the property at 3500 Daniels Road Northeast, which is being positioned as an opportunity for a manufacturing project. The market value of the land is just shy of $6.8 million, according to Brunswick County tax records. The land is owned by Alpec Polyester, a division of chemical manufacturing company Alpec, which is based in Mexico. DAK Americas, the U.S.-based subsidiary of Alpec, formerly operated a plant at the site that closed in 2013. Evan Sassaman, a senior vice president with Avison Young, based in Raleigh, said in a statement, "Located in Foreign Trade Zone 214 and nearby to Wilmington International Airport and the Port of Wilmington, the site is ideally situated near multiple modes of transportation and has significant infrastructure already in place, including river access, barge capabilities, heavy power, gas and nitrogen lines, and a 500-car rail storage yard." Bill Early, executive director of the Public-Private Economic Partnership Brunswick Business and Industry Development, said he has had his eyes on this site for quite some time for potential economic development projects. He said he would prefer the site to be developed into an industrial or manufacturing operation over a data center. Driven by the rise of artificial intelligence, data center proposals are popping up across North Carolina, typically on large tracts of land. Large sites are not always easy to find, especially ones that can support industrial activities, so we're very excited about this. Brunswick County's population is a little over 167,000 and grew by 4.5% between 2023 and 2024, according to U.S. Census data. In Wake Forest, a charter school sold for north of $90 million. A Franklin County charter school with an enrollment well above 2,000 has purchased its building and surrounding property from a West Coast group for more than $90 million. Wake Prep Holdings, an LLC that lists K-12 charter school Wake Preparatory Academy as its sole member, purchased its 67-acre property at 14111 Capitol Boulevard for $92 million late last month, according to Franklin County deed records. The deal equates to $1.37 million per acre. The school, which opened in 2022, has a Wake Forest address and is located just over the county line in Franklin County. According to financial services firm Baird, Wake Prep in July completed a nearly $109 million bond financing partnership with Baird's National Charter School Finance Team. In Johnston County, Clayton approves a $100 million shopping center. A Johnston County town with a soaring population could soon attract more national retailers and restaurant chains now that a developer has the green light to build a major shopping center. The Clayton Town Council recently voted unanimously to approve a rezoning request for roughly 74 acres off Clayton Boulevard, clearing the way for Casto, a real estate firm based in Columbus, Ohio, to move forward with its plans. These plans include a shopping center with at least one big anchor tenant, as well as multifamily housing. Tom Lowell, a development manager at Casto, said during the meeting that the total capital investment in the project will be between $100 million and $125 million. Casto plans to move quickly. On this type of project, once we start, we have hard deadlines that we have to meet to get people open. Lowell said, I would expect that when we start next spring, we're probably in a 2.5-year to 3-year completion cycle. And in Franklin County, a utility firm to lay off 126 after losing contract. A utility infrastructure company is laying off more than 100 employees based out of Franklin County after losing a contract with what it says is its largest customer in the state. N&S Locating Services, doing business as S&N Infrastructure, submitted a worker adjustment and retraining notification, that's WARN, filing to the North Carolina Department of Commerce recently, saying it will lay off 126 of its North Carolina employees on September 8th after Internet Services Company Brightspeed told them it's pulling all of its work from the company effective September 1st. The WARN filing said that while these employees work throughout the state, they report to the S&N field office at 12 Craftsman Drive in Youngsville. N&S was unexpectedly informed that its largest customer in the state, Brightspeed, was pulling all of its work from N&S, effective September 1st, 2025. Mary Kay, S&N's director of human resources, said in the WARN filing, as a result of this unanticipated loss of business, N&S will suffer a severe drop in revenue and will be left with no choice but to lay off employees currently servicing that contract in the state, effective September 8, 2025. Brightspeed, headquartered in Charlotte, declined to comment on the canceled contract. Lauren Onosorge gives us a window into the technology and aviation world in her section that she writes every week. Wolfspeed CEO still confident. Nearly 2 months after filing for bankruptcy to alleviate billions in debt, chipmaker Wolfspeed reported losses for its fiscal year August 25th. Company executives were not made available to comment, and the Durham company didn't host an earnings call for the second quarter in a row. In a release on the earnings, new CEO Robert Furl said he's more confident than ever in my decision to join the company. He called the firm well-positioned to be the global leader in silicon carbide technology. Our next important milestone is for the court to approve our plan of reorganization next month and emerge from Chapter 11 shortly thereafter with a much stronger financial structure, Furl stated. Wolfspeed develops next-generation semiconductors using silicon carbide technology, materials meant to be used in electric vehicles and power grid systems. But its biggest target sector, EV, hasn't taken off as Wolfspeed expected. It's not the only chip maker struggling to find its footing. Under the Trump administration, the federal government is taking a 10% stake in Intel. Wolfspeed was also awarded CHIPS Act funding, but has yet to receive it. Wolfspeed's earnings report showed revenue declined year over year from $807.2 million in fiscal 2025 to $757.6 million in fiscal 2025. That's despite the ramp-up at the Mohawk Valley Fab in New York, which XX have said for years will drive growth. The company's GAAP operating loss grew to $1.33 billion, nearly three times last year's loss of $445.3 million, driven in part by $417.6 million in restructuring and other expenses, including facility closures and headcount reduction as Wolfspeed worked to right the ship. The company, one of the largest employers in the Triangle with thousands of local employees, listed $7.6 billion in assets on $6.7 billion in debts when it filed for bankruptcy in June. Beach startup makes waves with investors. A horror film producer turned entrepreneur has raised $2.5 million to boost his artificial intelligence startup, a milestone that some hope will lead to more investments in coastal companies. Skillmaker.ai, a firm founded by Robin Cowie and based in Carolina Beach, is working to bolster training programs in the skilled labor arena. Investors, including Durham's Idea Fund partners and WAIL, that's Wilmington Angels for Local Entrepreneurs, are backing the company. It's the first real funding round for the firm, which has been working with companies like Napa Auto Parts. Cowie said the round outperformed its initial target by about $1 million. We're on our way to releasing the product next year, he said. RDU could add new flight to Caribbean. Raleigh-Durham International Airport may have another international flight in its crosshairs. One of its newest airlines, Bermudair, recently announced it had expanded its network with flights to Anguilla and the Caribbean starting December 17th. Initially, the flights will serve Boston, Baltimore, and Newark, but not RDU, where the airline has been flying to and from Bermuda since April. However, Bermudair CEO Adam Scott said he's not ruling out the possibility of expanding the Anguilla service to RDU, where the airline has been seeing a steady clip of bookings since its taking off on April 11th. In its first month, the flight boarded 148 passengers out of RDU, according to airport statistics. In May, it boarded 313 passengers. In June, it was down slightly to 293. We're all really excited about the Raleigh opportunity, and Raleigh is definitely one of those high-growth markets for us, he said. And speaking of flying, a Raleigh exec is sued over a $2 million jet. A Triangle executive whose company powers next-generation data centers faces a lawsuit over a $2 million plane. Sydney Hinton, whose previous firm, Power Secure, was bought out, has a new company, Utility Innovation Holdings, which has secured millions in venture capital. The Raleigh company, which according to Hinton has about 200 employees, develops power storage systems. The lawsuit, filed by Pennsylvania's Executive Wings, centers on an airplane, a Beechcraft Premier One business jet, that Executive Wings claims Hinton and his firm promised to buy for $2.1 million. The lawsuit, filed against Utility Innovation Group and its executives, Hinton included, claims defendants reneged on a deal, breaching the terms of the agreement, and withdrawing a $100,000 non-refundable deposit to fund the air purchase of a completely different aircraft. The lawsuit claims that despite notifying the escrow agent that the company would be buying a different plane instead, executives kept Executive Wings on the hook for expenses amounting to more than $300,000. And while Executive Wings was on the hook, it couldn't sell the twin jet to another buyer or even fly it for its own use, the lawsuit says. Hinton said it's cut and dried case, however. We just decided to move on, Hinton said, citing concerns about the plane. The real estate and development section is brought to us weekly by Kaylee Thompson. Knightdale adds more investment. A new mixed-use community in Knightdale is about to kick off its second phase. KDM Development Corp. of New York is moving forward on its part of the Village Gate development off Smithfield Road south of Knightdale's core. When fully complete, Village Gate will have 388 apartments, 76 single-family homes, 65 townhomes, and 17,500 square feet of retail space. The development is on 76 acres at the corner of Smithfield and Mailman Roads just north of Interstate 87. Kenyon Burnham, KDM Senior Vice President, said the company is closing its construction financing for Phase 2 and anticipates starting construction by the end of the year. Knightdale is growing fast as it attracts individuals and families with its more affordable housing prices and small-town feel. The median sales price for a home in July was $402,750, according to Dorify MLS. There's a lot of growth pushing out that way right now, so lots of people are moving to Knightdale, and everyone's moving out toward Knightdale, Wendell, Zebulon, that area, Burnham said. Obviously, we're looking to get ourselves positioned to take advantage of that. This is a long-term hold project for us. It's in the 10 to 12-year horizon for our organization. We're looking to take advantage of the growth trajectory of that area. Knightdale's population of 22,000 is about double what it was 15 years ago. KDM is building the apartments and retail, while Brown Investment Properties of Greensboro is developing the single-family home and townhome lots. For KDM's first phase, 212 units are built, with residents moving in and the retail component is complete and 50% leased, according to Burnham. The second phase will have 176 apartments, which will deliver at the end of 2026. The development cost for the apartments and retail is around $95 million. Industrial retail homes pitched for Northeast Durham. A home builder and a developer are teaming up to bring an industrial business park, retail center, and townhomes to Northeast Durham. A zoning map change was filed with the City of Durham by Trammell Crow Company of Dallas and Smith Douglas Homes of Georgia for nearly 200 acres off Interstate 85 near Glenn School Road. The rezoning request comes with a proposed development plan for 825,000 square feet of light industrial, 20,000 square feet of strip retail, and 237 townhomes. The property is currently zoned commercial neighborhood and residential rural. Trammell Crowe and Smith Douglas are requesting to have it rezoned to industrial light, commercial general, and planned development residential. Former Kane readies $60 million development. A new industrial project led by a former Carolina Hurricanes player is coming to Garner. Tim Brent with Longleaf Industrial, the real estate firm he started in 2024, paid $9.9 million for a vacant plot in the Greenfield North Industrial Park. The 36-acre site will become White Oak Industrial with two buildings totaling 386,264 square feet. I feel super fortunate that I wasn't expecting to be able to put a project into fruition as quickly as we've been able to do that with this one, so I feel very lucky to have landed on this spot, Brent said. Garner has become a very attractive spot for industrial and warehouse projects, given the area's proximity to Interstate 40. The development will cost about $60 million and is fully funded. Brent said funding is from a construction loan and a capital partner. He said construction on the first building will start in September, with delivery expected by the end of 2026. Apartments between RTP and RDU sell for $62 million. An apartment community less than 10 minutes by car from Raleigh-Durham International Airport has sold for $62 million. Massachusetts-based RMR Residential, which is under the asset management company RMR Group, acquired the former Carrington at Perimeter Park Apartments from New York investor Blue Rock Real Estate, according to Wake County deed records. The purchase comes 5 years after Blue Rock paid $52 million for the property. The apartments, now called Atrium at Perimeter Square, are off Highway 54 within Perimeter Park in Morrisville near Microsoft's former offices. Summit Wiley, a vice president and head of acquisitions for RMR Residential, said the company will invest $7 million in upgrades and improvements to the community. RMR will upgrade the leasing center, business office, fitness center, pool area, and landscaping. Units will also be remodeled as tenants move out, Wiley said. No tenants would be forced out to perform the improvements. The amenity and common area work will begin in a few months and take 6 to 9 months to complete. Atrium is RMR's multifamily brand. Wally has said the Triangle is a target market for RMR Residential. It owns Atrium Cary Park and plans to invest in more properties in the area. The final reporter page is Retail and Restaurants, written by Kate Tracy. Trophy Brewing readies new spot. Trophy Brewing Company is readying the taps at its new location in Raleigh. The hometown brewery is eyeing an October opening for its restaurant and taproom in the former Electric Supply Company building at 207 Bickett Road in Five Points. Dubbed Trophy Five Points, the 22,000-square-foot venue, formerly a warehouse, will add to the area's swell of retail food and beverage choices. Trophy will be located next to Ajja, that's A-J-J-A, Chidi Kumar and Paul Seiler's popular Mediterranean restaurant. Trophy also joins a retail strip at the bottom of Roanoke Park that includes the antique store Herbage and the consignment shop Little Oak Collective. At the new venue, Trophy will be operating a tap room with 10 taps and a full beverage menu with wine and cocktails, plus a restaurant with pizzas, salads, and more. Guests will enjoy ample indoor and outdoor space, plus a 9,000-square-foot flexible event space. Trophy will also utilize storage space for barrel-aging beer and spirits. The neighborhood is becoming more of a beer destination, with Nickel Point Brewing Company, Noose River Brewing and Brasserie, and R&D Brewing all having operations in the area. Linwood Brewing Concern, East Bauer Cider Company, and Pony Saurus Brewing Company are nearby as well. The 1.05-acre property and warehouse, which dates back to 1959, has a total assessed value of $4.13 million, according to Wake County deed records. An LLC registered to Trophy co-founder David Meeker purchased the property in 2023 for $4.06 million. Trophy Brewing's founders opened the Bend Bar and State of Beer at the Bend on Morgan Street earlier this year, near Trophy Brewing and Pizza on West Morgan Street. The team's other ventures include Young Hearts Distillery, a production facility and taproom on Maywood Avenue, the Maywood Hall and Garden event space, and State of Beer on Hillsborough Street. Popular pizzeria to expand to Wendell Falls. Residents of the fast-growing Wendell Falls community are getting a taste of New York-style pizza. Vic's Pizzeria and Bar has committed to a yet-to-be-built retail space at 2241 Big Falls Drive and plans to open in May 2027. Owner Michael Longo will be one of four tenants at the new retail building located across Taylor Road from Publix. Vic's will occupy 2,400 square feet on one of the corners with a patio. It's just an up-and-coming area. There's no pizza like mine out there right now, so I figured let's give it a shot, Longo said. Vic's will occupy 2,400 square feet with a patio. Longo's father started Vic's Italian Pizzeria and Restaurant in 1993 in Raleigh's City Market, and 9 years ago opened another location on Lake Boone Trail. Longo opened his own Vic's Pizzeria a year ago next to Dram and Draft at Block 83 in Glenwood South. North Hills lands another high-end fashion retailer. North Hills is adding to its streak of landing luxury retail stores amid the expansive remake of the shopping, dining, and entertainment district. Veronica Beard, a woman's apparel brand, has leased space in the North Hills main district with plans to open early next year. The location will be the brand's second store in North Carolina after Charlotte. Sisters-in-law Veronica Mealy Beard and Veronica Swanson Beard, married to two brothers, started the clothing company in 2010 and now has 40 stores in the U.S. and two in London, according to its website. Distinct apparel options include its Dickie jackets and its interchangeable Dickie layers that zip into the jackets. Dickie jackets range in price from $209 on sale to $1,998. And finally, in downtown Raleigh, 42nd Street eyes revival under new ownership. An iconic seafood restaurant in downtown Raleigh with a century-long legacy appears set for a comeback. After closing at the end of March, 42nd Street Oyster Bar could reopen as soon as February under a new ownership group, sources told Triangle Business Journal. The group includes longtime general manager Hunter Coral, according to one source. A new business entity, 42nd Street Partners, LLC, was formed in June, according to North Carolina Secretary of State records. John F. Holmes, Jr. is the registered agent for 42nd Street Partners, LLC, which lists the address of the restaurant's landlord, Hobby Properties. Holmes is president of Hobby Properties, according to Secretary of State filings. According to his LinkedIn, Correll has been general manager of the restaurant since 1996. Longtime owner Brad Hurley and co-owner John Vick closed the restaurant located at 508 West Jones Street in March. Fans of the restaurant packed the house ahead of its March 30th finale, waiting in long lines to celebrate one last time with reservations climbing to 800, up from an average of 350 a night. The restaurant building is owned by Hobby Properties. The original concept dated to the 1930s, and it reopened in 1987. And now we turn to our cover story. Commuter snarl. Which counties are losing the most workers to the Raleigh area? The cover story this week written by Ben Toman. Franklin County has undeniable momentum. Of all the places in the region that is oozing with new residents, it's growing the fastest. And yet every morning, its workers get in their cars and leave. In fact, almost 90% of private sector workers living in Franklin County commute to a different county for their jobs. A Triangle Business Journal analysis of North Carolina Department of Commerce commuter data from 2022, which is the most recent available year, found that Franklin County, with a population of nearly 80,000, is the greatest exporter of private sector workers in a nine-county radius. The TBJ analysis only looks at private sector jobs, as that is what is tracked by the state. About half of those Franklin County workers are driving down U.S. 1, which is Capitol Boulevard, or U.S. 401, which is Lewisburg Road, to the Raleigh area. Barbara Fedor, Franklin County's Economic Development Director, is looking to decrease that outflow. If someone is spending 30 to 40 minutes each way going in and out of Raleigh for work, and they could go 10 minutes down the road instead, They're happier because they're not sitting in their car, Fedor said. They're saving money on gas, they're closer to their homes, and it just improves their overall quality of life by not having to commute far distances. Franklin County is not alone in losing private sector workers. Each of the 9 HALO counties included in the TBJ analysis, which are Johnston, Chatham, Lee, Moore, Harnett, Granville, Nash, Wilson, and Franklin, saw more than half of their residents with private jobs leave the county for work. Those counties face a paradox. Their rapid population growth depends on the gravitational pull of Raleigh and Durham, yet that same reliance means local economies lose out when most residents take a portion of their paychecks across county lines. For county leaders, the challenge isn't just attracting more jobs, but keeping enough of the tax-based talent and consumer dollars at home to sustain long-term growth. Just think of the sales tax alone that's being spent elsewhere, said Chris Johnson, Johnston County's Economic Development Director. Anytime someone from Johnston County spends a dollar outside the county, then our tax dollars are going to support other communities, and that's just beyond travel and tourism. I'm just talking about normal shopping and spending money. The commuting phenomenon is accelerating across North Carolina, according to Chi Wong, an economist with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Only 12 of North Carolina's 100 counties saw more than 50% of their residents with private sector jobs work and live in the same county. In 2003, that number was 47 counties. The change has been gradual, said Jeff DeBellis, Director of Economic and Policy Analysis with the North Carolina Department of Commerce, with certain counties slowly passing the 50% threshold of residents who live in the county but work outside. But the regional trend of cross-county commuting isn't slowing down anytime soon. The economy is regional. We work within labor markets, Wong said. When people look for a job, they're not just looking for jobs only in their county. They're looking for jobs in counties that are nearby. The way people ultimately think of themselves as a worker is mobile. Here's a quick snapshot of 3 critical counties in the region. Johnston County is the largest out-of-county contributor to Wake County's private sector workforce. Chatham County has the lowest percentage of its private sector workforce made up of its own residents. And Moore County is an outlier, touting the lowest proportion of residents with private sector jobs who commute outside the county. Almost half of Wake County's private sector workforce comprises individuals who live outside the county, and Johnston County is the biggest contributor to that pie. Raleigh's eastern neighbor makes up close to 14% of workers who come from outside Wake County to work in North Carolina's most populous county. I-40 West and other local roadways are packed each morning as Johnston County residents flock to their jobs. Johnson, with Johnston County Economic Development, says that trying to get workers to stay in the county versus going to Raleigh is like fighting against the tide with a small bucket. The county's population, which sits at close to 250,000, has more than doubled since the start of the 21st century and is expected to grow by another 100,000 residents over the next 25 years, according to estimates from the North Carolina State Demographer's Office. That growth is bolstered by people who have moved to Johnston County specifically for the ability to commute to Raleigh while being able to buy a more affordable house. But Johnson, who says he is a big regional guy, is still determined to get more Johnston County residents to work in the county. A major piece in accomplishing that goal is getting new and existing employees to invest in the county, such as Danish pharmaceutical manufacturer Novo Nordisk, which announced a $4 billion 1,000 job expansion last year. Rather than running away from the fact that myriad Johnston County workers go to Wake County for work, Johnson said he's trying to use the numbers in his favor. When I'm meeting with industry folks and they say, Chris, your unemployment rate is at 3%. Where am I going to get my labor from? I'm like, well, there's tens of thousands of people leaving every day to go to work elsewhere, Johnson said. If you pay them a salary that's comparable to what they're making outside of Johnston County, I'm confident they'd much rather live here and work here as opposed to getting in their cars and commuting 30 to 45 minutes to wherever they're going each day. In Chatham County, the average home value for July was just shy of $553,000, according to Zillow. That's more expensive than neighboring Wake County, just below $496,000, Durham County, above $407,000, Orange County, above $518,000, and Lee County, just below $288,000. As such, for low to medium paying jobs in Chatham County, those workers often cannot afford to live in the county. Of all the nine counties in the TBJ analysis, Chatham County saw the smallest percentage of its private sector workforce made up of county residents, with less than one in three workers living in Chatham County. It's an issue that local business leaders and politicians are well aware of. Without some type of relief, lower interest rates, or policy changes, Chatham County risks becoming a market where only the wealthy can buy, said Eric Andrews, owner of Realty World Carolina Properties in Pittsburgh. I want students to see their teachers in the grocery store. If they have to live elsewhere, we disrupt the sustainability and diversity of our community. One way to drive up the number of workers in Chatham County who build and can also live in the county is to build more affordable or cheaper housing, according to Rebecca Dickinson, president and CEO of the Chatham Chamber of Commerce. Chatham County's top industries for work include healthcare, retail, manufacturing, and food services, among others. You've got larger employers that have most of their employees coming in, and then we have people who live here who either, if they don't work from home, are commuting out, Dickinson said during TBJ's Corridors of Opportunity event in July. And so the influx of in and out every day is relatively high in this county. Plenty of counties are hemorrhaging workers to the Raleigh area, but Moore County is an exception. When James Walker Tufts purchased more than 5,000 acres that would later become the village of Pinehurst in the late 19th century, he envisioned creating a health resort. Pinehurst Resort came online shortly thereafter, and thanks to the genius of Donald Ross, the area became synonymous with golf. Staying true to its origins, Moore County's top industries of employment for 2022 were health care and social assistance, roughly 26% of the private sector workforce, and accommodation and food services, more than 15% of the private sector workforce, according to Natalie Hawkins, president of the Moore County Economic Development Partnership, and a TBJ analysis of U.S. Census jobs data. Riding high on those two industries in particular, Moore County saw only slightly above 52% of its residents that work in the private sector leave the county for work in 2022. The lowest proportion of any of the nine counties in the TBJ analysis. Wilson and Nash were second and third, with 57% and 63%, respectively. Hawkins said that Moore County has created the regional hub for healthcare and retail and restaurants, and that the resident workforce retention rate is just because it's a great place to live. We've got a great quality of life, Hawkins said, and I think there's a lot of people like me who say, I want to drive my golf cart to work. I don't want to be in Raleigh traffic. I'm done with the hour-long commute to work every day. I can live here, have great health care, live in a safe community, play golf, and still have a good job. I have an article here that originally appeared in the Sports Business Journal. UNC doubles down on investment in football. This is written by Ted Keith. Let us begin with James K. Polk. It is confidently believed that our system may be safely extended to the utmost bounds of our territorial limits, proclaimed the newly inaugurated 11th President of the United States in March of 1845. 180 years have passed since Polk, still the most famous graduate of the University of North Carolina's class of 1818, encapsulated the vision of manifest destiny that would define his administration. This fall, a similarly bold approach for growth is being embraced at his alma mater, and it is beginning quite appropriately at a spot named in his honor. On September 1st, the grand experiment of college sports' new era will be brought to life at Polk Place in the heart of UNC's picturesque campus when the Tar Heels kick off their 137th season of football against Texas Christian University. None of the previous 136 has ended with a national championship, but opportunity and optimism abound. Bill Belichick has arrived as head coach, and everything, including Carolina's place in the football hierarchy, is being reimagined. Take, for instance, the pregame party area that debuted last year in the shadow of the bell tower. To accommodate larger crowds and capitalize on new revenue opportunities, this year the school has moved the whole operation to Polk Place and doubled its size, and added official student group tailgating for the first time, along with food and drinks, and added a concert series for the first time, starting with a performance from country star and former Tar Heel linebacker Chase Rice, and giving it all a name, Chapel Thrill Game Day. This is but one example of Carolina football moving past the bounds of its territorial limits, and with good reason. Hiring a football coach to a five-year, $50 million contract at the same time it entered the revenue-sharing era that necessitates $20.5 million be dispersed to student-athletes this year while still trying to support 28 varsity teams requires expansive thinking and daring action. In other words, North Carolina, long the home of men's basketball and women's sports dynasties, is willing to chart a new course in pursuit of a grand football destiny. If you can't afford it, it's just a dream, said UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham as the season opener drew near. You have to have an economic model that matches your aspirations. 9 months in, the Belichick era effect is showing positive returns. At the forefront of our minds has been how we drive more revenue for athletics in the new era in which we find ourselves, Chancellor Lee Roberts said. It's been even better than we might have hoped. We have high expectations, and they've been exceeded. The school raised football ticket prices 25%, yet has sold out 50,000-seat Keenan Stadium, which will grow ticket sales revenue from $12 million to a record $19 million, despite having one fewer home game than in 2024. Carolina is forecasting an additional $500,000 in food and beverage sales and $250,000 more in merchandise. Donations, too, are surging. The Rams Club, the fundraising arm of UNC Athletics, brought in a record $18.1 million this year. The excitement around football specifically has helped UNC and Learfield land several new deals already, including with Wendy's, Verizon, and DirecTV. This is a transformative moment for North Carolina athletics, said Learfield Executive Vice President Andrew Wheeler, who has worked with UNC for more than a dozen years. What's possible, 10% to 15%, 18% growth, that's an active conversation weekly. How far can we go? We've got an article here called Statewide Workforce Report, Tricks for Finding Untapped Talent. Apprentices to the rescue. The governor doubles down on strategy to supply trainable workers. This article written by Jesse Pounds. For Sherry Jones, one of the first challenges to starting an apprenticeship program for the city of Charlotte was changing mindsets about who makes a good hire. That meant helping city divisions embrace hiring people who may not have experience, but that have other valuable qualities, said Jones, the city's workforce and career development program manager. Key among them is a willingness to learn. What we've seen from the apprentices they've trained, she said, is impressive work ethic and high retention rates. Gavin Smith, an apprentice electrician with the city of Charlotte, said employers who invest in apprentices are likely to see a big return. They're trusting me to learn and become part of the team, he said. I'm going to give them 100% of my effort. It's a give and take. Apprenticeships are increasingly a focus for employers across the state and for government officials seeking to grow the available workforce. Governor Josh Stein's new Council on Workforce and Apprenticeships seeks to double the number of registered apprenticeships in North Carolina in the next 4 years. It's one of 11 workforce development goals the council announced in June, with the goal of ensuring people have the skills and knowledge for strong careers as the economy evolves. Apprentices can be any age from 16 to 60, according to Apprenticeship North Carolina. There were nearly 5,000 newly registered apprentices in North Carolina in its fiscal year 2024, up 45% from the prior year, according to data in the agency's most recent report. A registered apprenticeship has a few key components. Apprentices receive on-the-job training from designated mentors, and their wages increase over time as they learn and grow. Meanwhile, they also take classes relevant to their work, either through their employer or an educational partner, such as a local community college, culminating in an associate degree or other credential. Across the state, apprenticeship programs can vary significantly in terms of their goals, models, industries, and types of jobs they serve. Still, among the apprentices, employers, and nonprofit and educational leaders who spoke about their apprenticeship programs for the story, there were some shared threads. Probably the biggest thing is to make sure you pick good mentors, said HVAC technician apprentice Caden Hamlet, echoing a common sentiment. I'm not saying you have to be happy all the time, but you want people who can try their best. Here's a look at a few interesting and distinct apprenticeship programs in Charlotte, Durham County, and Guilford County, and some of the tips their leaders, partners, and participants have for employers. For the city of Charlotte, reasons to hire apprentices have included promoting social mobility and finding talent for hard-to-fill positions. City leaders hoped apprenticeships could help connect low-income residents with highly skilled jobs, perhaps offering pathways out of poverty. Jones said people often think of fields like manufacturing when they think of an apprenticeship, but the city is also finding success using apprentices in fields like IT and cybersecurity. Apprenticeships have involved a wide mix of people in terms of background and education, Jones has found. For some people, she said, an apprenticeship represents a long-awaited foot in the door to working with the city. In many cases, they've applied for years and years, position after position, she said. She recommends that employers not be too intimidated by the upfront work involved. Going to the trouble of identifying the competencies and skills needed for each position is much more efficient in the long run, she said. It gives a clear map, she said, so you aren't always restarting directionless if an employee leaves. Smith, an electrician apprenticed with the city's aviation division, works at Charlotte's airport. He suggested that employers work to make their apprentices feel comfortable and that they make sure to check in with apprentices to ask how they're doing. If apprentices feel like they can reach out with questions or concerns, that builds trust, he said. Missy Aiken, the director of workforce partnership for HVAC company Brady Services, said her company started rethinking how it hires following the pandemic and the workforce departures that came from COVID-19. With more skilled HVAC technicians leaving the field rather than entering it, Brady's new strategy included adding more apprentices, she said. We're having such success with training our future technicians, Aiken said. We hope they will spend their entire career with us. Today, Brady Services has about a half dozen apprentices, double or triple their ranks before the pandemic, with three of the apprentices part of a program called Guilford Apprenticeship Partners. Guilford Technical Community College is an educational partner for the GAP program. Beth Patonzo, Senior Vice President of Instruction at the college, said she advises employers that they don't have to start big. She said they sometimes worry about how many apprenticeships they can handle, but she said she tells them it's fine to employ just one or two. High school students who are interested in GAP apply to the program as a whole. GAP then sets up accepted students and interested employers. It was kind of like speed dating, said Camden Leonard, an apprentice at Brady, describing how apprentices and employers got to chat with each other before mutually ranking their choices. Employers also got to watch apprentices work through group challenges together, he said. Leonard started working at GAP immediately following his senior year of high school. He and his fellow GAP apprentices at Brady get on-the-job training from the company, plus additional instruction in the classes they take at GTCC. As far as getting into the HVAC field, it's the best way compared to the no-school route or the trade school route, Leonard said. You're getting both, so you come out on top. Aiken said that Brady realized it needed to make its program more structured to recognize which apprentices had progressed enough to warrant promotion. Now the apprentices work through modules with specific things they need to learn and tasks they need to complete as part of their work, plus a test. This helps the company fast-track apprentices who have demonstrated they have the skills needed for more advanced responsibilities while they continue their apprenticeship. The people that came before us, they're kind of jealous, Leonard said, endorsing the new system. Hamlet, who is also apprenticing at Brady, said he's feeling good about the progress he's made and about the service he's providing through his work. No one else is happier than the people who get cold air when they're hot, he said. The Durham Early Childhood Education Apprenticeship Program is built to help child care providers who give young students on-the-job experience and college credentials simultaneously. The idea is to help lay the groundwork to eventually provide universal pre-K to all children in Durham County. Maggie West is the Workforce Support Program Manager for Durham Pre-K at Early Years, a nonprofit serving as a group sponsor for the apprenticeship program in partnership with Durham Technical Community College and 24 child care centers across the county. West recommends that employers consider an apprenticeship program connect with a group sponsor. The sponsor, she said, manages documentation for the apprenticeship. It takes a lot of the work off the shoulders of the employer, she said. She also recommends partnering with a community college like her program has done with Durham Tech. The college worked closely with Early Years to design and implement the program, she said. Michelle Bass, the pre-K director and program director at Primary Colors Early Learning Center in Durham, is a mentor in the apprenticeship program. She said she saw joining the program as an opportunity to work more closely with teachers. At first, she worried that she wouldn't have time for the additional responsibilities. However, after carefully reviewing her schedule and the apprenticeship program requirements, she felt she could do it. As a mentor, she helps teachers learn a variety of skills, including best practices for how to interact with parents. Teachers, she said, sometimes get overwhelmed, and it's been helpful to them to have an additional outlet to walk through things with her. They're happier about their job, she said. They're feeling more confident. Their self-esteem is higher. It's just a better work environment. Elizabeth Hopkins is one of the apprentices working as a teacher at Primary Colors. This is Hopkins' second apprenticeship placement through the Durham Early Childhood Educator Apprenticeship Program. Hopkins' biggest advice for employers getting started with an apprenticeship program is to carefully read the apprenticeship contract and make sure they understand it. My experience thus far has been amazing, especially with Primary Colors, she said. As part of her apprenticeship, she is learning how to identify potential educational moments for young children and take advantages of those opportunities on the fly. There's always something that you can teach, she said. For entrepreneurs looking to dive into the craft beer business, a Viking-themed brewery and restaurant with two locations is seeking a buyer. Norse Brewing Company is for sale for $8.1 million, a price that includes prime real estate in downtown Wake Forest and downtown Zebulon. Norse opened at the end of 2019 in Wake Forest, and at the end of 2023, the brewery opened the Longhouse in Zebulon after a two-year build-out of its historic building. So there's an opportunity for you if you have an extra $8.1 billion laying around. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.